Okay, we are tackling the first day of our next topic. So, hand out some back there. So I've got a somewhat humorous, I thought Dave found this excerpt. So I'm going to read to you this little introduction to kind of start a discussion. So, this comes from anthropologist Eleanor Oakes. And her colleagues engaged in this fascinating study comparing families in Samoa and Peru with American middle-class families. Now, they obviously can't reach all American middle-class families, and different regions, different locations are very different. But it's interesting, some of these observations. So they say, children in Samoa serve food to their elders, waiting patiently in front of them before they eat, as shown in one video snippet. Another video shows a girl around 5, climbing a tall tree to harvest papaya, helping haul logs thicker than her leg to stoke a fire. By contrast, the U.S. video showed, this is Los Angeles parents, so I don't know, take it with a grain of salt, showed Los Angeles parents focusing more on the children, using simplified talk with them, doing most of the housework, and intervening quickly when the kids had trouble completing a task. In some cases, children routinely asked the parents to do tasks, like getting them silverware. How am I supposed to cut my food? Dr. Oakes recalled one girl asking her parents. So asking children to do a task led to much negotiation, and when parents ask, it sounded often like they were asking a favor, not making a demand, researchers said. Parents interviewed about their behavior said it was often just too much trouble to ask. For instance, one exchange caught on video shows an 8-year-old named Ben sprawled out on the couch near the front door, lifting his white high-top sneaker to his father. The shoe-laced dad, untie my shoe, he pleads. His father says Ben needs to say please. Please untie my shoe, says Ben in an identical tone as before. After the father hands the shoe back to him, Ben says, please put my shoe on and tie it, and his father obliges. Ben's next words, please get my coat from the closet. Then his father says that Ben should get it himself. Isn't that amazing, says Dr. Oakes. It's only after he escalates that Dad asks him to do something for himself. So, quite a contrast between the two different regions, countries, parenting styles. Okay, so let's just discuss, like, what's the difference in the way that the kids see themselves and their role in the kind of the two different scenarios, the two different cultures. Serving. They're either serving or being served.
It's like when they're almost the master of the family. Not just taking service, but they're in control.
They're in control. The masters, right? Leading. Mm-hmm. View. What about their view of maybe their roles of their parents? What do you think the differences are?
Samoa and Peru, the hierarchy is directly oriented, where the parents are in charge of the home. In the examples from Los Angeles, the hierarchy is inverted, and the children who have the least wisdom, the least knowledge, the least skill are placed in charge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you contrast the tasks that are being performed too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gathering food, gathering firewood. You know, as opposed to put my shoe up.
Yeah. And it may be challenging, but what are the like pros and cons of each? Because I think there's a little bit of a hint. I think there's one dad where he makes a couple comments about like it's just too hard to do. Like, what's the pro and the con of each kind of view?
I mean, it's difficult to train your children to do things around the home and to teach them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
Mm-hmm. Just doing what the kids ask, that's sometimes easier.
Yeah. Escalate into...
Easier in the short run.
Yeah, right? Easier in the short term to just quick fix.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Easier, harder? What's better or worse than the two? What do you think would be maybe a con of the kind of Peru and the Samoa? What's difficult about?
You have to accept watching them work hard and feel pain.
Yeah.
And you have to welcome that so that you can model that welcomeness for them so that they can learn.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe it's that they're working hard or feeling pain, but it could be just the risk. So if you notice, like, it says that a girl around 5 climbing a tall tree to harvest papaya, right? So sometimes those tasks come with them, you know, some even risks. If you allow your kids, the more you allow them to do, there's more risk you're taking of either harming themselves or, like you said, messing it up. Failing miserably, right? When do you let your kids cut up their own fruit, you know, or whatever? When can they do this? What tasks can they do without harming themselves? And when can you entrust them to that? So, and we kind of talked about how the American family, the child kind of perceives themselves as the boss. They're kind of there. And so, looking on page 2, right, why did the Americans... children feel free to negotiate with their parents?
Because they've done it before.
Yeah, they've probably learned to do that. So I think this is a real key question to think through, right? Why do the parents allow the children to have this status in the family, and what are some assumptions that undergird this perspective? Right? Why would parents kind of take this approach?
I would say, like, the Los Angeles approach, like, kind of, maybe a little overprotective, mm-hmm. in a sense.
Yeah, tell me a little bit more, like, what are they thinking, what are they being protective of? What are they concerned about? Right. Yeah. What do you guys think? Why would parents want or allow the kids to kind of have this status or this role? And I'm sure this maybe is like hard to imagine because it's not like not your parenting style. Yeah.
If you push them up front and they're making all the choices, then they're bearing all the responsibility and they get to, you know, dodge that responsibility, dodge that.
Mm-hmm. You're saying the parent is allowed themselves to dodge the...
Well, they don't want to occupy the top of the hierarchy, okay. So they move that power back to the kids are all more happy to occupy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of this view that the children should have their own choices, their own responsibility for their own actions, and you're kind of there to facilitate, just make things available for them. Can you guys think of other ways this would play out other than like ask your kids asking to tie your shoe? Like where do you see this happen in school or at home? What are some examples of maybe kids kind of taking this role?
Going to get upset.
Right. Right. So you kind of hit on a couple things. One, like giving them lots of choices and options and kind of going with it, what they want. And then also kind of an avoidance, not wanting to upset, right? Not wanting to upset the children. What else? Where else do you guys see that? This kind of the culture around us. You kind of use the word child-centered. Yeah.
Well, just from an educator's perspective, I mean, looking in the classroom, seeing just this needs-based assessment that's been going on for many, many years. Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't anything new, right? I mean, the pendulum just keeps swinging, you know, if possible, you know, more and more to that side of, mm-hmm. you know, what do the kids want? I mean, I know mm-hmm. we have coming from the top, you know, from the feds, mm-hmm. this kind of, you know, if kids are in the public schools, that is, you know, Common Core, but it is also directly in the classroom, you know, what are the kids' needs, you know, really focusing mm-hmm. on that, where we have differentiated instruction, mm-hmm. And so forth.
Yeah.
And so it's really the focus on the student, where we've seen that grow and grow and grow and mm-hmm. grow to what the curriculum looks like yeah. today yeah. in different aspects. But I'd also throw in, you know, Pastor Dave talked about this with regard to the snowflake culture, mm-hmm. the snowplow parents yeah. you mentioned the other week, and then we also have on top of that victimhood culture, mm-hmm. Which has an influence on who is the focus on.
Yeah.
And that really bleeds into our families today.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of getting around, and we're bringing it down to where it's a focus on the children, but kind of underlying that, and Adam hit on it a little bit, is that our culture in general, right, apart from God, wants each person to have autonomy and be the authority over their own life. And so the way that works out in parenting is that parents are putting that authority onto the child. And so it's a misunderstanding of what is authority and what is the authority structure that God's created. And you talked about like the reversal of those things. And so what we want to talk about kind of in this next lesson is what's the proper biblical authoritative role? So how do kids, parents, God, how is that authority structure set up? And how do we parent in a way so that we're properly filling those authority roles? The children, the parents, and the family as a whole is functioning properly. And so that we're not misplacing, giving one authority where they shouldn't have, or one giving up authority they should be taking on. Okay? So, let's look here at the background. So, we're going to understand some of the non-negotiable commands that we'll look at. We'll look at some Old Testament and then into the New Testament. So, in Matthew, so I want to read there, Matthew 22, 37 through 40. Yeah. So he's reminding us that the greatest commandment to love the Lord and then to love by loving others is central. And then coming from that are all the other commandments. And he says, on these two commandments depend the law and the prophets. And at that time, the law, they would think of what? What were they thinking of? Yeah, Ten Commandments, the Old Testament law. All right. So, in light of this, we see the Ten Commandments are just expanding on how do we love God and how do we love others. And so, if we look at this, the Lord wants to be worshipped exclusively, so no other gods before Him. He wants to be honored invisibly, so no idols. He desires to be spoken of reverently, so not taking His name in vain. So we see those first commandments are focused in on how do we love God, right? How do we love God? Finally, God wants Israel to set aside a time of worship for Him through reflection. So there's the Sabbath. So those are the first four commandments. And then as we get to the fifth commandment, all right, we have Exodus 20:12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord God has given you. Okay, and so we're making a note here, right? It's part of the Old Covenant. which was to Israel. And so it's not a specifically for us today as we are under this Ten Commandments, but we're going to see that as we study the Old and the New, that this is something that will be continued through, will be repeated like many of the commandments were in the New Testament. So let's look at Colossians 3:20. Someone will read. And then someone, Ephesians 6, 1 and 2. They're not written in here, so if you want to look those up real quick, let's go to Colossians 3:20 and Ephesians 6, 1 and 2. Andy, you got one?
Yeah, Colossians 3:20 says, "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord."
Okay. And then somebody got Ephesians 6, 1 and 2.
"Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise."
Yeah. One of the first scripture passages our kids learn by heart. Like, what's Ephesians 6:1 say? You know, so we see that this is not something that was strictly for Old Testament. So we're going to kind of focus on and look in here. So let's look at the command. Honor your father and mother. So think about the position of where this is. So what were our first four commandments dealing with?
How we relate to God.
Yeah, how we relate to God. And then what are the last five? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
How we relate to other people.
Yeah. And so this is kind of sandwiched right in the middle. And I think we've talked about this before. Sometimes people view this kind of as a hinge in a way of how we're transitioning from thinking about our relationship to God and to others, like how those two fit together. All right. So what do you think this means when it says, well, let's look at who are the recipients of the command? So who is this commanded to? Who?
Children.
Okay. Well, yeah, children. Honor your father and mother. And what does it mean to honor someone? It's a broad question.
Show respect.
Show respect. Okay.
Put them above yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's look at a context where this word is used again. Someone want to get Isaiah 42:23. It's down here.
"You have not brought to me the sheep of your burnt offerings, nor have you honored me with your sacrifices. I have not burdened you with offerings, nor wearied you with incense."
Yeah. So that's that word. "Nor have you honored me with your sacrifices." So he's using that same honor, describing how they haven't honored God. And then Deuteronomy 4:9. Let's read that.
"And we take care and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things that your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, making known to your children and your children's children."
Okay, so let's kind of just tie things together here. So a couple of questions. How can honoring your parents fulfill both of the two greatest commandments? How does that fulfill both of them? Yeah, very much so. That.
Probably one of the ways that children so honor their parents is by valuing their input, their instructions, their directives, and their training.
Mm-hmm.
Because God has given parents the responsibility to train up children in the faith.
Mm-hmm.
So it does kind of bridge that.
Yeah. What is it, and like you mentioned that God has given the parents as the means. So, you know, how does these passages of scriptures inform the structure in which God has designed the family to work and the authority? As compared to the first two examples that we looked at. Like, what would be the role of the parents? Does Deuteronomy 4:9 say, make sure you make your children happy and meet every need that they express? Right, in Deuteronomy 4:9. What is our role? If we're a parent, what are we supposed to do?
Teach your kids.
Teach them what?
The things of God.
The things of God. Right? Where do you see that specifically? What are the words that right?
It says make them known to your children and your children's children.
Yeah, make them known to your children and your children's children. So that's their role. It's commanded by God. So we can see that comes from Him. Right, and then we know again from the scriptures we just looked at, what's the role of the child in that relationship? Parents are to be teaching them about God, and the children are to what?
To honor their parents.
Honor, right? Show them respect. Give them the weight that they are worthy of. The note there carries this idea of a weightiness that is used of God. And then think back to the Ephesians and the previous two New Testament, Colossians and Ephesians. What are the verbs it gives there? Children are to what?
Obey.
Yeah, so we have obey and we have honor, kind of tied together. And so just in those few basic verses, we can see a real contrast between the biblical model for parenting and the world is that we are to take that authoritative role that we are the teachers that transmit who God is to our kids. And we're responsible for that. And the children are responsible to obey us and honor us. Okay? And they, in the Old Testament, that was one of the 10 commandments that God gave, was to honor the father and the mother. In the new, what does it say? Let's look back real quick at Colossians and Ephesians. Does it give any sort of results or descriptions as to why or how they're to obey? That was in which one?
Colossians?
What's it say exactly?
For this pleases the Lord.
It pleases the Lord when they obey. Right, and then it's a little slightly different in the Ephesians. Children obey our parents for.
On the earth, that's verse. It goes into verse 3.
Okay, verse 3 talks about long life,
yeah.
And also I think it just says, "For this is right." Children obey your parents in the Lord. In the Lord, for this is right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's kind of what we're just gonna just talk about. Just what does that look like? Right. What does it look like to have that model, and how can we kind of that out? What do you guys think? Comments about that? Is that something that you think is somewhat foreign, somewhat familiar? Is it something that has been difficult to adjust to? Is it something you saw? I know when I was growing up, my father was very much an authoritarian, but somewhat absent in that he was just working all the time, and my mother was kind of more of a child-centered, whatever you need, give you all the opportunities you want. So I kind of had a blend, and so I think we often tend to parent as our parents parented us. You guys see any particular challenges in terms of like what you've seen in your families or cultures as to living this model out?
It's really hard not to teach a kid that's not yours when they're in the store and you're watching them act like that.
Disrespecting their...
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to say it, hey, you know.
Like, or your kid was like...
Yeah. Don't talk to your mom that way. It's true. It's true. I know coaching little kids rec sports, oftentimes, you just, you know, and being a teacher, you just think, you see how they interact with you and think, oh, okay, so I kind of understand the parenting style of what maybe they've encountered. And so sometimes it's just, I'm going to tell you what to do, and then you do that. You kind of have to explain that process. Yeah. Anything, what else? Yeah.
I think you've hit on it, Scott, as far as like the biggest, when there's a clash between these two, and I'll just say two, maybe there's more, but the two models of parenting when it comes to authority, where you have a more child-centric model, and then the God-given model that we just looked at here. Talk about, you know, how do you address those challenges? Because I think for all of us, it's a very fine balance. Because even for those of us who may have grown up with the biblical model, you know, we do have that human nature where, you know, we do want to give to our children, right? So my question is, you know, how do we, strike that balance between these two, I don't want to say diametrically opposed, but diametrically opposed models. So.
Yeah. I think what I hear in your question is that how do you exercise that authority in a way that is still seeking the best for your child's individual needs, desires, how that, you know, every child is somewhat unique and different. And so there's a sense in which you don't just say, every kid, you're going to do this, you're going to do this the same way. So there's a sense of which you tailor your parenting, right? Yeah, what do you think?
Well, like him going off of what she said, you know, in the Bible it does state that if a child asks for a loaf of bread, the parent's not going to give you a rock.
Yeah.
And so I think that God realizes that there is kind of a time where you do need to focus on the child, because as parents we are called to take care of our children. And while that means like their spiritual health, also their physical health as well. I don't think that means to like, okay, well, we're going to go to t-ball practice now, and we're going to go to baseball practice next, and we're going to go to basketball and swimming, and like leaving like the kids dictating the schedule. I think though, you know, I can understand your point how it's two total different models, but at the same time, I can also see where God realizes that there's still the role of the parent to take care of physical needs as well.
Yeah. I think one example that we see, you know, my wife has several siblings, all with kids, and all except one. And so we see differences in our parenting just in meal times. So if you've ever struggled at all feeding kids of any ages, or them wanting to eat or not wanting to eat, and that's a practical way sometimes your parenting has worked out. You know, do you give them food and say, you will eat everything on this plate? Do you give them food and say, this is what you can have, and let them eat what they want? Do you give them a few options and say, you can have this and this? Do you say, what do you want to eat? And then prepare that individually for each child. Do you say, you can have chocolate cake if that's what you want? You know, like there's a spectrum of ways in which you have to engage and lead, taking care of your child's physical needs, and then trying to balance that. You know, do they have any special dietary things that they need? Is there some freedom that you want to give? What do you guys think about, you know, is there any meal times or other particular times when you just feel like there's a battle for, you know, kind of the authority or who's going to make those decisions?
I always tell my kids I'm not a restaurant.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can choose what they want on leftover night.
Right.
But, like, as far as, like, structured meals, it's like, this is what you get.
This is the meal. Yeah.
I think you, what you were saying about family, like, we see it the most when we're with all of our in-laws. Like,
mm-hmm.
All different. And sometimes it's good, the fact that I'm, you know, we can be
right.
Such a hard line, and we're like, oh, maybe we should.
Yeah. I think
it doesn't question our authority when we say, you know, this is what we're having,
mm-hmm.
and taking into account their preference, you know, like
yeah.
things like that. But there's so many practical parts of parenting
yeah.
where you have to consider a lot of different angles, and
yeah.
sometimes my tendency is towards a hard and fast line, and
mm-hmm.
this is it, and, you know, and trying to find a balance in that is difficult sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think. Why, you know, why do you think it's, I mean, it's obvious, but why is it important that the parent has the majority say in when and what and how the kids eat? Why do you think so?
Because the parent needs the majority say in all of their
mm-hmm.
life, their spiritual, their physical.
Like, what would your kids pick if you just...
Oh, I mean, chips.
Chips.
Some
have chips and then ice cream.
Lunches have been giving out cereal this week. And
yeah.
It's like the best.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just got done cleaning out like our 11-year-old's room with him, basically me task organizing him very authoritatively, and I got to see everything he ate. So you know,
yeah.
wrappers everywhere. So there's no surprise.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
Our 3-year-old thinks he needs like a Dr. Pepper in that.
Yeah. I just need a pop, just right now, for breakfast. Yeah.
He doesn't need more. That's not
yeah. I mean, it's funny. I worked one summer. I worked in several different youth and mental health, different types of organizations when I was going through college. And we used to go around for this preschool class where half or more of the kids had identified behavioral psychological disorders. And we would pick them up, take them to school, and sometimes they would come out, and I'd say, oh, did you have breakfast? And, you know, he's got orange all around. Like, yeah, what'd you have? Pepsi and Doritos. You know? Pepsi and Doritos. I'm like, oh, I'm like, you look tired. Well, I just slept in front of the TV on the couch. You know, like, and so you kind of see, like, well, it's probably not the best thing for you, you know. But that's what he chose. He had the freedom to choose. And so it just reminded me, like, one of the reasons why we're given that authority is because we know things that they have no idea about. You know, it's like the kids sometimes say, I only want mac and cheese because they don't know what anything else tastes like, in a sense. So, okay. So let's look at, let's see, where am I at? Where are we? Okay, I think I'm on page 4. Yes, so we got done reading that scripture about transmitting. Deuteronomy 11:19, someone to read that?
You shall teach them to your children, talking of them when you are sitting in your home, when you are walking by the way, and you lie down.
Mm-hmm. I think one question I would ask is, like, what does this tell us about how involved we are supposed to be and when we're supposed to teach? I mean, what does that give a picture of in that verse?
Constant.
Yeah, it's just constant.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, that also implies that there's a presence there, right? That the mother, the father, or both are there with their kids when they are in their house, when they're walking by the way, when they're lying down, when they're getting up. So you're there with them, and you're taking opportunity of that time to teach them, okay? And so one kind of important thing to note here is that, you know, God has created lots of different authority structures within the world. Okay, so we've got the parent is the authority over the child. What are a couple other ones that we know God's instituted? Authority structures.
Elders and pastors over the church.
Yeah, so spiritual authority, the elders, teachers, overseers in the church, over the church. Anything else?
The boss is the authority over the employee.
Yeah. So in the Bible, you've got master servant or boss employee. There's another key one.
We're also modeling how they see God.
Very much so. Yeah, very much so. So in many ways, that authority, how we view authority, is very closely tied with our understanding of God. And I would say, you know, a big one as well is just the government, the governing authorities, the king, etc. And so there's a note here that God delegates authority to the mother and the father. Parents are to be the foundation of the society or sub-governors under the great king. So you've got, you know, governments that are ruling in large sections, and then smaller groups, say churches, where you have smaller groups of people, you know, and then you've got, right, the foundational unit is the family. And so it's the very first place where your kids learn and understand this is what it's like to have an authority relationship. To be someone under authority, this is what you act like. To be someone that's in authority, this is what you act like, and this is how they interact, what it looks like. Oh, I was looking forward to this question. Question F. We'll probably spend the rest of our time here. What are some ways in which children typically dishonor their parents? I'm sure this is probably other kids you've seen. Not our own, of course. What do you guys think? What are some good material?
It could apply to us as well, right?
It could apply to us, like when we were kids. Ah, okay, yeah.
They're still our father and mother.
Yeah. So what are some typical ways?
What did he say, excuse me?
It still applies to us today. I think since our parents are still our fathers and mothers, I think, yeah, so we can still dishonor them, right, today, even though we're grown. So.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
You're having an adult conversation and they come up and they say, Dad. Oh,
we're thinking of our nieces and nephews.
Yeah, their nieces and nephews, they would do something like that. Like, stop what you're doing. I've got something important type of thing. I don't remember which parents gave us their trick that they always use, Well, it depends on the size of the kid, yeah. Ours was the leg. They were supposed to come up and they just put their hand there, wait quietly. So it takes a while to learn that, right? Starts out, hey. Well, you do it quietly. So, but yeah. What are some other ways? I guess it may be harder when they're a few weeks old or... Mm-hmm.
So if they delay in their obeying our instruction, that's the way. If they whine about it,
mm-hmm.
they, while they're doing it, that's disobedience also. Or if they only do it partially,
right.
They don't complete all the instructions, that's also disobedience. So all of those.
Lots of variety, right. That's true. And it seems like, I don't know if you guys, it seems like your kids are like performing a scientific study on you. You know, like they try every tone of voice and like you're saying, like, I have to put my shoes away. Well, if I throw them in the closet, does that count? You know, is that a being? And then, okay, no, I have to put them in. So if I stomp off, is that okay? Like there is that. So they, how you respond, and that you said, what were the ways that they?
Right away, all the way happily.
Right away, all the way happily. So, and there's other ways people have said. Does anybody else have any kind of way they think about obedience or defining the right away, all the way? We used to say with a happy heart. Yeah. Like you tell them, okay, I want you to stop that video game, and then it's like, I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
Or it's the, I'm too tired. I just don't feel good. I'm like,
yes. Sir. Yes.
And then you say, okay, fine, you have, as soon as dinner's done, whatever it is, you have to do that. Oh, can I go play? No, you're too tired, and you're like, certain you don't feel good.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. To like the argumentative, talking back, mm-hmm. emotional side of disobedience. And that often, at least for us, has been so much more difficult to navigate because they speak in full sentences now and they,
right.
They come up with reasons that seem reasonable and, like they have this more of a relational aspect mm-hmm. that comes into play that I'm sure will just continue. It's a shift to like mm-hmm. a more difficult thing to deal with in the
yeah.
Like, I said, come to me, you didn't come.
Right.
Whatever.
We started it as, so I have an 8-year-old, and I started with her, instead of getting an allowance, a paycheck on the days I get paid. So if she does what her normal tasks are, and if she helps out around the house without throwing a fit, without giving me a hard time, negotiating with me, she can earn that money. But if she doesn't do what she's supposed to do when she gets that money, she has to pay me.
Mm. Ooh.
So,
twist.
Like on the way here, she's owed me $2 since yesterday. She's her money. And I said, she's like, I've got $4.55. I said, technically, you have $2. $2. And she's like, you're right, Mom. And she will put it together hand in hand.
Yeah.
She was fighting me on cleaning her room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to lose and I'm not going to pay for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. What you guys are saying too, I think what we experience is that like the disobedience, it's not necessarily that their disobedience is different. It's the way in which they try and justify it. When they're little, they just, they kind of grunt. But like you said, when they're older, they got complete senses as to why they shouldn't have to. Or if they have siblings, it's like, well, so-and-so got this, right? Okay, so let's look. We'll leave that. We'll keep thinking of other examples. But so in Ephesians 6:1, it says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right." According to this passage, how does the child honor his parents? This is the easy one. By what? By obeying them. Yeah, they honor them by obeying them. So, and then the question, what do you suppose this looked like in the ancient Near East? There's a note here. 5- and 6-year-old boys and girls would begin to pick vegetables, gather fuel, clean up after a meal. The household would organize tasks according to gender by the time they reached adolescence. The males that required greater strength and danger would do the hunting, handling of the domesticated livestock, butchering the cattle and the sheep, the training the females and the skills needed to run the household, the harvesting the vegetables, preparing the food, spinning the yarn, knitting garments, and caring for babies. So what do you guys think? What are some things where, like you think about what this obedience look like, what are some good things to maybe start your kids out on that helps them learn to be obedient to, have a task when they're little, say 1, 2, 3. I mean, because it's going to be different at different ages. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Putting their, you know, making a mess.
Yeah.
It's a struggle at times, but they can also do some good things in that area.
Yeah. That's great. So picking up your toys if or whatever you've been playing with. What else can they do? How can they obey?
And when they're asked.
Yes.
We try to practice when you're not, you know, like in the home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come right away, but even our youngest child, she can come when we ask her to come.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost a progression where, in order to learn the next thing, you have to learn some basic ideas like stop or come here, you know, freeze almost, you know, if they're in the middle of doing something. I remember one book. When Carissa and I had Addison, our oldest daughter, we read through several parenting books. And one book, I think their shorthand was, think about the first stages, like they called it German Shepherd parenting. It's like, they need to be able to sit still and come to you, you know, just very basic. Start, if they can sit and then come to you when you call, that's a good start. So they're just obeying, come here, stay there. And then you kind of build... can build upon that. Okay, what about this passage? Let's kind of maybe wrap up with this, but Acts 4, 19 and 20, you might think, well, there's not, I don't know if there's parenting in Acts 4, but what extent must children obey their parents? So are there any commands, like are your children bound to obey you in every single command? What do you think? Is there any clauses for the negotiating children?
My mom tells me a story that makes this example a little bit sticky.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because when I got up from bed, when I knew that I shouldn't, and I said that Jesus told me to, she didn't know what to do with it. It's a caveat, so then all of a sudden I know these things for my kids, but, you know,
so you say, well, Jesus told me for the year to obey me.
Yeah. I guess it's a bad example.
That's a good point, you know, like it brings it, bring you can bring it back to the Bible. Well, Junior, right here. if I'm coaching my kid and I tell him, hey, take out Johnny the soccer over there, you know. Go take him out. You know, should they obey me? No. Yes. No, it says, that's what my parents did. I was the enforcer. I just sent me.
We shouldn't ask our children to sin.
Yeah, we should not. Yeah, we shouldn't ask them to sin. So it kind of cuts both ways, right? So your children, if you tell them to do something that would be sinful, then they do not have to obey you. Or if you try and forbid them from doing something that they ought to do, then they can disobey in that area. And so that's something that really can be helpful, helping them connect that you are God's representative, to say, you do not, if you are obeying God, and so if I ever tell you to do something, there's only one time that you can disobey us, right? And that's if we tell you to disobey God. And so that helps them understand that really God's the authority and that we are representing him. So if we tell you, and that helps them as well as they move into their other areas, right? So what did we talk about were the other authoritative areas? Besides parents and children, there was pastor's elders, right? If your pastor elder tells you to do something that would be sinful, right? You've realized and learned not to do that. If your boss tells you to do something that would be sinful, you're not under the obligation to submit to them. Same thing with the government. So they're learning all this interaction and the role of the authority from you and from how God set that structure up. And then, Noah, this kind of goes to your question. But this is not talking about honor. At what point do children no longer have to obey their parents? When's that? Or does that ever end? You still?
I think the honoring part doesn't end.
Right. So the honoring doesn't, but what about the obeying?
I would say if you leave the house and you're, well, obviously when you get married, you're not like, you're a separate family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've got references there. Someone want to read Genesis 2:24? Yeah, so like you said, forming the family, or even before that, when you leave father and mother. And we've used that a lot with our kids. Hey, in a few years, if you leave, you know, you can do whatever you want. You know, you're getting closer to that point. So, all right, well, that's our first introduction. We'll talk more about the specifics of this next week. All right, I'll pray for us. Father, I pray that you would be with us today. Help us to just think through this issue of authority. Help us to think about how we as parents can exercise this authority in a loving way that brings glory to you, and how to teach our kids how to submit to and be obedient to you and to us as their parents. In your name, amen.